Welcome to the Midlife Mixtape with Robin Bright. Today we're going to talk about a topic that many of us of a certain age have either gone through, are going through, watching our kids go through. We're recording this in the fall of 2023 and it's college application season. And I have two daughters, one that just graduated from college from University of Oregon and another is a sophomore at Chapman University down in Orange County. So it's still fairly fresh in my mind. Got definitely some parent perspective on going through the whole process, but I also know things have changed a lot in the last few years. I brought some people in today that are, they're the big dogs when it comes to all this. I am here with Kelly Watkins and Bibiana Corona and Cindy Johnson, who are all counselors over at Vintage High School here in Napa, California. They work with students daily on this process, starting freshman year right up through their senior year and helping them with every step of the way and know it from a more inside perspective than I, as a parent, had to kind of find out on the fly. My kids all knew from working with them, but from my point of view, there's just so much. There's so much, and it's so different these days from when I went through it back in the 80s, the whole process. So welcome, ladies. I'm so glad you guys were able to come in and join us. Where are we in the deadline process?
We have just finished the early deadline admission. November 1st is the very first deadline that comes around. Just finished that here a couple days ago, and then there will be some other early deadline. Different schools will creep up on us, like the 15th. But then the next really large one is the UC and CSU applications are all due the 30th of November. And then we have all the private schools and out-of-state schools who will linger on into December and January. They just are specific to what that institution, what that campus is looking for. And so those deadlines do extend out past California. But California is November 30th. It's a standard, always turn those in by November 30th.
Oh my God. Now you mentioned November 1st being early deadline. So it's not the final deadline. Is there a benefit to have being done in on November 1st?
Yeah, so many campuses, not necessarily in California, unless you're a private school in California, have created a system that's like early action or early decision. And students and parents really want to read the fine print because there are options that are binding, meaning if I'm accepted, I'm promising, I'm signing my name that I'm going to that campus.
Okay.
And so it's really important that they all read the fine print on that. But there is data out there that can show that it's possible that the applicant pool is a little bit smaller. And so perhaps that can help admissions if it's a school that is like your dream school, you know.
So if it's the one you've been dreaming of, you know, your Rudy in Notre Dame, you might want to consider it. There's nothing that's going to sway you.
Right. And the early admission deadline is nice, but regular admission is just fine too.
It's in the end, it doesn't matter when you've said
in
sure.
In the end, they just want to see you apply and hopefully get in. There's an application system out there called the Common Application that students can use to do like one application for numerous out of state and private schools. They have, I think, like over 300 different campuses.
Maybe even more at this point.
Yeah. It's a huge volume of campuses throughout the nation that utilize that application system. So if you're applying to multiple schools, it can be really great. If you're applying to one school that they have their own institution app, sometimes it's nice to do that.
As far as the application, so Common App will take care of a lot of schools, then certain schools will have their own individual application.
Yeah, so like some of the out-of-state schools are not on Common App. For example, I'll just use Boise State University. Mm-hmm. So they might be on Common App as well, but you can apply directly from their websites. Mm-hmm. Those schools are super simple to apply to. It's basically your personal information, what high school you went to, graduation, major, and then they don't really even ask for your whole record of grades. You just submit their transcript through your counselor, and then that's pretty much it. It sends off. So some of the out-of-state applications are actually very simple. I did want to speak to similarly to the CSU application. So we have 27 days left. And as Ms. Johnson's working with seniors and the other senior counselors in the Valley are working hard assisting, I think big tip is the CSU application should take no more than 2 hours. So even if students have not started applying, all they really need is a copy of their transcript in front of them. And that's it. There's a couple questions that they need to ask
their
parents.
There's no essays on this.
No essays, no letter of recommendation. They pick the schools that they want to apply to. It's one application that gets sent to all of them. You do have to pay per school that you're applying to.
That was the one thing with the Common App and that the CSUs being basically just check the box of all the ones you want to apply to. You can get sticker shock pretty quickly because it's very easy to check. Well, that one might sound good.
Okay, and I believe
we had to do some editing.
This year, I believe it's $80 an application.
Oh.
So it's between 70 and 80. I'm not quite sure exactly where it is. But
so doing your research prior.
You should, and this is what parents don't realize, even at the end of junior year, I mean, you need to set aside between $500 to $800 just for application fees, unless you meet the low income range that would allow you to get 4 CSU applications free.
Oh, that's nice.
The other thing with the CSU, there are impacted CSUs. So San Diego State, Cal Poly, San Luis Obispo, Long Beach.
Very in demand schools.
Very impacted, mostly in the engineering, computer science, business and psychology. Major, you can go undeclared in all of those. However, if you do want to go engineering, you have to pick that from the get-go. You cannot transfer into those programs.
I remember Cal Poly and we asked them the question about, they were one that at the time that my youngest was applying required that you declared a major. I think they were the only one.
Cal Poly is still the only CSU that requires that.
And we asked them, well, what if she changes her mind? Can she change her major? They said, absolutely. But this is what we were told 2 years ago, that if you wanted to change to engineering, you have to reapply and they'll relook at everything.
Yes.
So don't think that you're going to apply as like a basket weaving major and then like slide into their engineering program that way.
No. I think otherwise for CSU, it's pretty straightforward. It's just super important parents when they're entering their grades for their senior year, they put in progress for the fall semester and planned for the second semester because those classes are obviously we don't have grades for.
Right.
They calculate the GPA based on the A through G classes they've taken. So that's done within the application. And then you press submit. And CSUs do come back earlier, some of them, with application acceptance. So let's say Chico, if a student applied, you know, a couple weeks ago, because the application actually opened in October 1st, some students are already hearing back from Sonoma State, Sac State, Chico State. So some of the CSUs, you actually hear back pretty quickly.
That's nice. That's
San
really
Diego,
great.
The super competitive ones, you're not going to hear back until March.
They want to see everyone that they're looking
exactly.
at.
Exactly. They're like the UCs.
Yeah. Are we doing test scores anymore? Like, are they still on the SATs? I think Tessa's year in 2021 was the first year they were not doing ACTs or SATs, or at least requiring them. I noticed a lot of the apps all asked you to put your test scores, but it was optional.
Yeah, great question. So the UC system and the CSU system are all test blind. So they are not considering SAT or ACT scores in the admissions process at all. There are other schools throughout the country who are private and out of California who are asking for test optional. So it gets a little confusing because it starts to feel a little bit like, well, test optional is just test mandatory, but it's not. Really and truly, the campuses are being very genuine when they say it is an optional requirement, and it is something that if only you're reporting only if it's going to support your application. So, for example, if you were a student who during COVID had a really rough time academically and perhaps didn't meet that GPA requirement that you could have met, but your test scores are strong, you submit those test scores and it tells a different story. On the flip side, if your GPA is really strong and you had a bad day at that test and it's not what you wanted, there's no need to submit it. They genuinely mean optional.
Okay. That's good to know.
I do want to mention that the SAT is going through a huge revamp. So we need to keep our eyes on the news of the colleges as we go through this revamp. It's now a digital exam for the current junior class. I have a feeling the admission requirements may see some changes in
may
that.
May see a shift.
I, well, I don't know what that shift would be, but the test is very different than what it once was. And so I know that's going to impact the colleges and how they continue to accept. So I think it's a moving target. And I think we need to just continue to watch the news and rely on the leadership of the universities to let us know, keep us informed.
How are the CSUs and UCs differing?
Well, for the UC application, again, students have to meet college entrance requirements. So they have to be taking those classes while they're in high school.
Where you ladies come in, helping them make sure that they don't reach their junior year and thinking, oh my gosh, I've just missed all these classes I should have been taking.
Yeah, definitely. And as I'm going into the freshman classes, I'm letting them know, hey, you begin now. You have to make sure you keep that door open right now. So by the time you're a senior, even if it seems like it's such a far away time from now, you at least have that option available to you your senior year to decide what you want to do. Don't close that door yet. For the UCs, again, they have to meet college entrance requirements. They do need personal insight questions to be answered. So those are 8 different questions. Students get to pick 4 for the application that they choose. And it varies from talking about how creative you are and how you use your creativity, how you have a leadership role and how you chose to show that while you were in school. The questions vary.
These are short answers. These are not the essay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are short answer. And there's no right or wrong question to pick, right? There's not one question that as a reader of the application, you prefer better than the other, right? We just really want to get to know the student. And I say we because I forget that I'm also a application reader. So this is something that I get trained to look at.
So you're seeing it from 2 different sides.
Yeah, yeah.
Fantastic.
So that's part of the reason why I went into it. As a high school student, I didn't apply to any UCs, so I didn't really have that perspective. So as I started in my counseling career, I had a difficult time kind of guiding these students, how do I guide you to apply and write these personal insight questions if I didn't even have that experience? So that's why I started doing the application reading, so I can learn how to better help my students.
Oh, that's a great attitude about that. You know, I want to see it from both sides too.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. And really, there's not one that they're hoping you'll answer?
No, there isn't one that we prefer. It's the opportunity for us to get to know the student. We look at the academic profile of the student. We look at their GPA. We look to see if they have any AP test scores they submitted, what they did that's part of like extracurricular activities that they might have been a part of, because in that UC application, you can add that. So we see how committed they were to being part of their campus outside of the classroom. And then the PIQ kind of seals it all together, right? We get the opportunity to really get to know the student, why they are possibly choosing that major and how they're tying it together with how they answer the question. We really look at it, I guess, like an interview, a written interview. We really just want to get to know the student. Questions have to be very clear and answer the question.
So if there was a time and opportunity to sit face to face with each student, mm-hmm. these are questions you might ask them.
Yeah, it is like a personal interview. There isn't something that we prefer to see compared to the other. It's just really just an additional place to get to know the student, because we're looking at a paper, we're looking at their academic profile, but what else? So that's the biggest part of the UC application, is those PIQs. As a reader, I want to see why you really want to go to this school. Why did you choose that major? What did you do at school that sets you apart from other students that might be applying from that same school? So I want to see what you took advantage of. So the PIQs are such a big part of that.
Oh, that's great.
So on the Common App, where you apply to private schools, there's still one essay.
Okay.
And that goes to all of the schools. But still, within the Common App, each college, like Chapman University, they'll get the Common App essay, but then there's individual short answer questions that students have to answer for each college. I think the PIQs, I mean, Bibiana nailed it. I think the biggest piece that I see with kids, they don't understand the interview style in responding. So they think it's this creative writing exercise. It's your syntax and your flowery language and a story and an introduction. It's like, get to the point, give us examples, make sure you're answering the reflective aspects of the questions. How did that academic struggle impact your achievement later on? And a lot of students spend so much time building a story that they don't actually answer those impact reflective aspects of the prompts.
It's a get to the point thing. They,
you want to present things. Yourself really well, but one thing that is, you know, in our culture, we don't talk about ourselves like this in an interview. It's always awkward, right?
Right.
So imagine writing that as a high school student who you like hardly have met yourself, you know? So the biggest and most important aspect is you always want to be student forward. You never want to read a student's essay. Students will get lost in the storytelling, and the reader can walk away from the personal insight question or the essay and know all about a student's, you know, grandmother or whatever inspired them, or sometimes a traumatic event, but you know nothing about the student. So it always needs to be student forward. And when kids are asking for helpers to read, they should always ask that person, what did you learn about me? They should also ask people, you know, so you're reading your daughter's applications and everything, and as a parent, we fill in the gap. And so the kids want to ask, what were the gaps that you filled in? Because if we're making assumptions, they need to write those. They need to be explicit with the things that they perhaps missed.
That's an excellent point. I absolutely remember with both my daughters, their English teachers, you all, everybody was offering to read their responses, give feedback. And I remember one of my daughters being kind of reluctant, like, I don't want to ask her to do that. And I definitely take advantage of that.
We're happy to help. Yeah. This is our job.
And more eyes. I mean,
yeah. For sure. And you're right. I would fill in gaps because things that, well, I know what she means.
Right.
And it's not, it won't translate if I know what she means, but someone else doesn't.
Right. Well, and I think it's only for the use, for the UCs, it's only 350 words.
Right.
That is not a lot. That is basically almost half a page, single spaced. Whereas the Common App essay for private schools and out of state, that's 650 words.
Right.
And that can be more of a story and more of an essay kind of format. Whereas the PIQs, there is no room for fluff. Because 350 words will just get, you know, sucked up real quick.
And I would suggest, I'm assuming you would agree, if you're asking for other eyes to read these responses, don't ask them on a Tuesday and expect a response on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Plan ahead.
They'll still do that, right. But yes, plan ahead.
Definitely plan ahead. Maybe have 2, 3, even 4 people that you know on campus that know you really well, that really saw your growth through your high school journey, that can help you really identify like how to make this such a good PIQ answer. And they just, I feel like students need to connect to those people that know them the most.
Agreed.
Yeah.
I just really want to tell all the families, make sure your child gets it done before Thanksgiving.
Oh, yes.
There is nothing worse than being home over Thanksgiving break, thinking I have all sorts of time, and then there's a system failure, or the kids just simply need help, and no one's available, and you're at home sweating, right?
Because you're on vacation as well. You do have lives. You're people. Vacation. You are here for our students, but...
Right. Hopefully we're on vacation. But at the same time, you know, it causes unnecessary stress. So if you can get it done these next 3 weeks, if kids can get it done, man, just do it.
And then you can just relax and enjoy your time.
Enjoy your turkey.
Robin, I was going to say, so post enjoying your turkey dinner and having your apps in, one of the pieces that I feel like I probably could do better job with educating my students about is like, what is the next step? So after you, and I know Cindy's going to be doing this with her seniors, but after you submit your applications, they're all done. Hardest part is over.
Well, the next step is waiting, right?
It's waiting, but there's pieces you have to do in the interim of receiving your denial or acceptance. So students are terrible about reading their email. And unfortunately, from here on out, the colleges are only going to be corresponding with the student.
I'm so glad you touched on that, because I went through that with both my daughters that were very diligent students, usually very on top of things. And sometimes there were deadlines or we need this other piece.
Yes.
And I actually got to the point where I needed to ask them for their password and to go in on their email and told them, I'm not reading your texts. I'm not like scoping in on your Snapchat. It's not, I am simply looking to see if there is anything from CSU. And I know this is your responsibility, but there's too much writing on it. And then we got to the point point where it was just a reminder to them to
right.
go check your email.
So in the process of preparing our students for being checking their email regularly, they will need to get, they will receive an email from every college they applied to that says, you know, thanks for applying. Here is your Santa Clara Bronco login. And they have to create a username and password for each portal. And that's actually where they're going to get a to-do list from every college. You need to send your transcript in by this time. You need to, a FAFSA, like have you filled out your FAFSA.
And these are good things to keep, like write them down, whether it's on paper or on a Google sheet or whatever, but you're going to start having usernames and passwords for every
portal. And this is also where a lot of the colleges actually send the admission status.
Yes.
So you can actually check and see if you've been accepted through the online portal that each school has set up for the student. So I have a horror story.
Oh, goody.
It actually like truly did break my heart. So this was after students were getting accepted, you have to turn in the housing application for on-campus housing. And this student had gotten into all these UCs, amazing CSUs, and she missed the email that said there was a deadline for her housing application. They rescinded her acceptance. Mm. And the parent felt terrible. And there was nothing. Like the college was, it was a hard deadline. She had to go to the community college as a result because it was past the May 1st, you know, deadline. She'd already accepted at the school.
Heartbreaking.
So the reason I'm bringing this up is they have to read their email, be responsive, and the deadlines, there's no late work policy for these deadlines, like in high school. Like,
right. A lot of these kids have gotten used to late work deadlines, especially during the pandemic.
I know. But this was the hardest lesson for this poor young lady who I admire dearly, but the college was not, they had so many people on the wait list that anyone who did not meet that housing application exactly next. So I think that would just be something to really make parents aware of.
And as there's a parent, no wiggle room. It's a very fine line because you want to, I mean, these are your college bound children. You want to give them the responsibility. You want to put it in their lap. You want them to be adults and handle it and be responsible. But on the other hand, they're still 17. And if you're a parent of a 17-year-old, you know that they're works in progress.
Right.
And there's so much on the line that it's a weird line to walk with. Where do I step in just to make sure that something major doesn't get dropped versus being a helicopter parent and doing it for them?
Right. Yeah. I've been a high school counselor for 21 years now. And
I've seen it all.
I feel like I've always said that a senior year is like the other end of the rainbow. You know, we walk our kids to kindergarten crying, right?
Yes.
And we're looking forward to graduation where we're going to be crying again. But they need our hand-holding just the same in senior year as they did in kindergarten. And I know there's a lot of, well, they need to be doing this. They need to be learning how to do this. And I would say they need to be doing it with us.
Mm-hmm.
Especially after the pandemic and given all that our kids have endured and gone through, it's anxiety-inducing, the notion of moving out of the house, potentially choosing a path for your future, you know, just teenage hormones, right?
Right.
And then all of the other crazy things that they're have going on. The idea of filling out forms and applying for things and just getting all that done is brand new to them. And so if there are things, I love that you offered to check your daughter's email. That was huge. So that's a great suggestion.
And then we eased it to just daily reminders.
Totally. I oftentimes, I try in my own house, my child will laugh at me when he hears this because it doesn't always work. But, you know, a set of time. I'm in a space like Sundays at 4 o'clock, we're going to have a quick little 20-minute check-in. What are we doing this week? What do we need to accomplish?
Mm-hmm.
It's just really, they need our help. And just remembering, they're still kids in big bodies.
Yes.
Even though I know the world says they're almost 18, they're, you know, all of that, that's true. But these are huge life decisions.
And to remind them of that too, I would think would be so important too, as far as it's okay that you need this help.
It's a journey. And just remembering, you know, the eye rolls as a parent, they're a badge of honor. The frustration that they're giving to you, they're giving it to you because you're their safest person in the whole planet.
Yes.
And so while it's hard to digest, and as a parent, it's hard to take that deep breath, I think we all remember that moment when we went, oh my God, mom and dad are right. Or, oh my gosh, how did mom and dad do that? Or how did, you know, those people in our life who were our parent figures, how did they do that? They were right. And so we just need to keep perspective perspective and check our, it's so hard to check our own emotion mm-hmm. around it.
And I think a lot of these kids feel like, well, it is a big deal for sure, just from talking to my own and their friends, feel like this is the end all be all. You're deciding the course of the rest of your life. And it's okay to remind them and reassure them that, I mean, how many adults do we know that are doing nothing that they set out to do at 17, 18 100%. Years old? It's crazy. If things change, things shift, people change and shift, and right. and that's okay.
It's totally fine. And we just need to keep that perspective at all times. And I would also say, you know, as a parent, reach out for help. Help your child be the person who's saying, hey, what am I missing? What did we forget to do? I feel like we should be doing something right now, but I don't have anything on the list. Asking about scholarships, asking about your example of checking the email, like just as a parent, just being forward in that mm-hmm. is totally fine. We are more than happy to help parents who are coming by.
Absolutely.
All the time. All of our doors are open, and we just want to, this is why we got into this business.
I love that. Now, before we kind of move on from applying, the whole process, thoughts on how to choose, how many to apply to is a good mm-hmm. number. How do you decide large versus small, private versus public, that whole idea?
I think 10 to 12 schools max applying to is the echelon, like the upper ceiling.
No more.
No more than that. I mean, I actually think making a choice is the hardest part of the whole process. Applications are kind of, I mean, yeah, you want to put your best self forward, but making a choice that is going to have such a life impact is really challenging for our students. Mm-hmm. And they don't want to make the wrong choice for themselves. I always tell students, you need to have a variety. I get really frustrated with students that feel the pressure that they have to apply to only UCs, like UC or bust. We have to get out of that frame of mind. UCs are great schools, but guess what? 110,000 people applied to UC Santa Barbara last year, and they're only offering admission to 5,000 freshmen.
110,000 applied?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
And so I think sometimes we don't understand the numbers game. UCs are a reach for all students, even our students in the top 10%.
And I think that's so different for the parents, for people our age, to wrap our brain around, because it wasn't like that back in the day.
It is so much more challenging to get into a UC. Our kids are doing more than enough. We don't need to put more pressure on them to do more and more and more, but they have created kind of a problem when it comes to how to get into their schools. UCs can be on the list. I think students really have to be honest about how far away they want to go, because students think they want to go get as far away from home as possible. And far away also means out-of-state tuition, which is more expensive.
And maybe not coming home for Thanksgiving yeah. when Christmas break is yeah. in 2 or 3 more weeks.
And my sister went to Arizona. She wanted to get as far away from my mom and dad as possible. Sorry, Katie. and she came back. It was too far.
Right.
And so,
or just those weekends you want to come home.
Totally.
If it's a quickie Southwest $60 yeah. flight, not such a big deal. But if it's going to be in across the country, it's a whole other ballgame.
Yeah. And so I think really considering the distance, knowing yourself, like you said, we have students that want that big college experience. And I totally get it. The football games, mm-hmm. the rah-rah. But then they need small environments to learn in. And so that can be a conflict between this experience versus where they're actually going to best learn. And so I think we have to encourage our students to not sacrifice their learning for an experience. And where can I have both of those things? Because most all colleges are going to offer study abroad, club, extracurricular activities that they can get involved in. But if knowing themselves, if a big lecture hall of 500 and they need more one-on-one attention, I mean, that's a game changer.
Right.
So also, I just think, especially with cost and as a parent, it is something we have to really consider. I don't think students understand the value of what some of these colleges cost. So
right. They've never bought anything
no.
with their own money that's even sort of comparable.
I mean, the application fees alone, 10 applications is about $1,000.
Right.
So spending $2,000 on applying to college, I'd rather the kids bank that money for actual college. But students do apply to all these crazy schools that are so far away and so expensive. They get in and then they haven't had the conversation with mom and dad about what we can afford. And so Auburn was their number one choice, but it's $70,000 a year.
Right.
I mean, that's kind of absurd.
Absolutely.
Unless you have the means, great, go for it.
But now, on that note, though, there are some things to look into. And so I had one that was out of state tuition, but public, and another that is at a small private school. I mean, very different experiences. One was at University of Oregon. Talk about a football game at Autzen Stadium. Oh my gosh, this was a girl who I had almost talked into going to the homecoming and big games because she wasn't really into football, and now to this day still wears nothing but green and gold because it's so...
I love that.
It's ridiculous how contagious it is. Yeah, and sure. Then the other is a very small private school that when we looked at the sticker price, if you will, we kind of said, not so sure this is going to happen. But then she got a merit scholarship that brought it all the way down to the exact same price, practically.
I think we just have to remember there's a spot for every student, and there are some really good things going on in the community college level that if you're concerned about price, community college with, well, I mean, props to Napa Valley College is doing such good work right now. If you've driven past, you've seen their housing that's going up.
It's exciting. Yeah.
I know, super exciting. But additionally, with the Promise Grant, though the Promise Grant is for California residents, by attending any community college in the state of California, you have, it's tuition free for the first 2 years. So if you have aspirations, if cost is a factor, and you have aspirations of going to Stanford or USC or Auburn or somewhere else, you can save money by starting at a community college and transferring. Yeah. That's one path. But there are all these magnificent scholarships. Kids just have to hustle for scholarships too.
Right.
And that's one more application to be thinking about. And so talking about where parent support can come in, parents can definitely support by researching scholarships, mm-hmm. even getting the application started. There are a lot of it is just name, address, phone number. Mm-hmm. And if it's money that's attached and your child is going 18 million different directions, that support could be really helpful. And then I know I'm hoping we can talk a little bit about the FAFSA too.
For sure.
But that document is a necessity for every student, no matter the family income.
That's one that's going to need to be filled in every year, too, so it's huge.
Just one other tip I want to say is kids need to also think about the experiences they're hoping to have. So, for example, if I'm super into politics and policy and thinking about where can I go to school that is going to afford me internships,
right.
Sacramento State, somewhere near Washington, D.C., somewhere near San Francisco, New York, L.A., those kinds of things, if you're maybe out of state, but in a capital city, something like that. Or if you're thinking film, the film industry, Southern California, yeah. LA, you know, thinking ahead mm-hmm. at the types of careers you're looking at, you also want to consider not just the academic experience, but the internship potential.
That's a great idea.
One thing I just wanted to say also is after the application season ends, you've already submitted your applications and you start receiving those acceptance emails or those notifications, maybe narrowing that down to your top three and then going during spring break to go visit them. See which school you visualize yourself in is one of the things I always recommend students to do because it's different from applying there. And
the
then
visits can get expensive, but can. I would suggest even just as a parent, like when you're on vacation, mm-hmm. if there is a college nearby,
yep.
I'd say go see it. Even if it's not on your radar, if nothing else, it gives your child that idea in their head of what a college campus might look like, maybe a baseline that they can base all the others off of just to, this is what it's like. I say always take advantage of visiting.
Visits. And they still do campus tours virtually. Some of the schools still do that. So if cost is something that we don't want to add to because the application season right. was already so expensive, doing like those virtual tours too can help.
One last little plug that all the schools, Napa, American Canyon, Vintage, we're all doing is we have many college reps who are coming to our campus.
Definitely.
Visiting.
Take advantage of this.
And even in the ninth grade, we want to encourage our younger kids to start visiting those campuses. Now, some of the schools even give you a little leg up. They give you kind of a bonus point in application if you've attended their sessions. Gonzaga, St. Mary's, Santa Clara, they've all been very clear about that. There's some great pieces of information you can get. They are all the representatives are admissions officers who read applications. So they're giving really good advice.
And the calendars are right online. And I'm sure you guys communicate with your students all the time about it.
Some of the ways that we can bring down cost, especially with the private schools, and you had mentioned Chapman. So when students apply to out-of-state schools and private schools in California, the application to the school is also their scholarship application. I'll give you an example. A student applies to University of Arizona. They are looking at, they're screening the application. Susie gets in. In her application, her acceptance letter, it's going to say, based on your high school GPA, you are going to be awarded our non-resident, because she's from California, our non-resident, you know, Chancellor's Scholarship. 25 $25,000 a year for 4 years. That is guaranteed money. She does not have to reapply for it. And it brings the cost of out-of-state tuition for her down to maybe close to a UC. And so that is where some of these out-of-state schools are becoming as affordable as staying in California.
Right.
And then there's also the WUE, Western Undergraduate Exchange. Those are all the Western states from Alaska to Hawaii and all the states in between. Boise State, they have a WUE scholarship, so a non-resident California scholarship that really discounts tuition for students applying from California. And so that can be a $17,000 scholarship.
And so
that
it can take an out-of-state almost to as if it were an in-state.
Absolutely. Now, one thing to note is people think University of Oregon, there is no WUE.
No.
So you really have to go on the WUE.edu website and look at the colleges that are in that exchange program.
It is not everything West Coast.
It's not everything West Coast. And certain majors at certain schools also don't qualify. So you really have to look at the school to see if they have a WUE scholarship. The second layer of scholarships or bringing the cost down is like what Cindy was saying, scholarships that are local, state, or national. We have every high school has a local scholarship program where
so many generous people here in our community.
We are so lucky. And I think Vintage gives away to seniors only at Vintage around roughly $130,000 every year.
It's amazing. The list of people, it's local businesses, local organizations.
So Cindy's seniors right now should be applying for that local scholarship application. It puts them into a pool of all of those community local scholarships. In addition, all the high schools are promoting scholarships on their websites, in their school bulletin. But then there's huge search engines like Unigo or FastWeb. These are websites, friends, where you can go on, create an account, and get linked to scholarships that match your profile. Big Future is another great one. Scholly, My Scholly, that was created by a guy on Shark Tank, and I actually really love that one. It's an app on your phone you can use. There's so many scholarship search engines. I would say do one.
So you're basically just searching for free money.
Yeah, and you can reuse your PIQs, your Common App essay, and reuse it for your scholarships. You don't have to reinvent the wheel.
Oh, that's fantastic.
But then the biggest piece is the FAFSA, the Free Financial Aid application that gives our most needy families and low-income families government assistance, but then also has loan options. So Cindy's going to go into that because we're about to start that process.
Right. So you apply, you're doing the waiting game, you're doing all the stuff that you need to be doing, checking your email, and now you have the FAFSA.
Yeah, the FAFSA is the free application for federal student aid. Really important to know it's free. You want to make sure you're on the right website. There are, unfortunately, like everything, there are scammers out there. So you're never paying anybody to fill out the FAFSA. It's undergoing a huge overhaul. The federal government, with all of everything that's gone on with student loans and everything, also took on the challenge of redoing that application, making it a little more user-friendly, bringing the question count down to a little more manageable number. That, unfortunately, has caused a one-year delay of when it's being launched. So typically, you've been doing it in the past every year. Typically, it opened in October. It's now not going to open until late December. Therefore, families need to really get on board with making sure that they are, for people who are FAFSA eligible, they need to make sure they're getting on board creating their FSA ID, their federal student aid ID.
Which is another one to make sure you write down or put it in your notes or what have you, because if you do it your senior year and you're in your junior year trying to redo it again, you're going to need to find it.
You apply every single year while you're in college. Yeah. And so really important that families go on now and create that ID. Eligible families, so families who have a social security number of citizenship or non-citizen eligible, they need to be doing that form. Other families who not have a social security number and are going to school in California, they should be filling out the California Dream Act.
Okay, good to know.
One more tip about the FAFSA. So you're getting your FSA ID or you're creating your Dream Act account. The Cal Grant deadline, which the high schools all apply for every student for the Cal Grant, the FAFSA is the second piece to that. So it's important they've extended the deadline this year to April 2nd rather than March 2nd. So April 2nd is that deadline. You need to get your FAFSA in by then. Every family, regardless of income level, it always breaks my heart when I hear families saying, we're not going to get anything anyway. We're not going to apply, right? I have too many assets, or I have too many this, that, and the other. They all families should apply. Number one, you just don't know what's going to happen. happen in life. Nothing's a guarantee, right?
Right.
So we want to make sure we have the right paperwork in for our kids. But secondly, that's how institutions will also give you merit-based aid. They will also see how you qualify for scholarships and different things like book grant and different activities, different opportunities for aid is through that FAFSA application.
In the FAFSA application, you list the schools you've applied to, and FAFSA directly communicates with the university's financial aid departments. After you've been accepted by end of March, April is when FAFSA and the universities are talking, and then send through the portal of the university what your financial aid award statement is. And this is where families, April is really where you're laying out all of your options, looking at all the financial aid award letters, visiting the schools at their campus new admit days, and making the decision based on all of those things. I 100% agree with Cindy. It's super important that that application is filled out. One thing to note, May 1st is the deadline by which all students have to decide where they are going.
Right.
And that is a hard deadline. One school, you have to put a deposit down saying, save my seat. This is where I want to go to college. And May 1st is that deadline.
I just wanted to also quickly mention all of the campuses have wonderful programs, EOP, Educational Opportunity Program, that is available to students who do have need, who may be the first in their family to go to college, who may be of a population that is underrepresented in colleges. That there are applications within the student application, the actual university application, the UC, CSU, where you check the box, are you interested in applying? And I really want to encourage families to apply for that. That also has additional scholarship, but also additional guidance, additional ongoing cash aid at times, can help with housing. So if you're a first generation college bound student, that's a program all kids should be applying to. Community college level, four-year college level, public, private, they should be applying to those programs.
Oh, that's fantastic. Have you seen any shifts or changes in those post-COVID years, or are we almost past it? Because I think, are these seniors the ones that were eighth grade?
Yeah. No. These were our freshmen. These poor babies. They have been through so much. They didn't get to finish their eighth grade year, and they didn't get to start their freshman year. It was a really rough high school transition for them. These kids are so strong. They are such warriors. It's their resiliency, I think, is going to be like another generational moment in our time. The test optional is something that's a remnant. There's more opportunity to apply to varied schools, I think. Schools are looking at students a little bit differently.
Yeah.
They are understanding that there are things that maybe haven't gone right.
Mm-hmm.
They are encouraging that they share any mental health concerns that came out of COVID. As we know, that's been a huge thing. A lot of families have a feeling that mental health is a bit of a stigma still in the college application essay. But colleges do want students to feel comfortable to talk about their experiences. And then I think there's also a large push, but that's a student-driven push, that they may want to go to a community college level as well. Yeah. Community college, they're maybe not completely ready to leave home, and they like the notion of taking their time. They're a little more in tune with caring for themselves and their own mental health. And so while the college application season creates a tornado of energy,
yes,
it's important to keep perspective that if your son or daughter is not ready, it is absolutely okay to start at the community college level. They are a great institution. They have so much to offer. Take your time with it. We're shifting gears as we get older, right? We're not stagnant. We can study one thing, have a job in another. Life is not a race.
No.
So it's just more than
ever. But it can feel like that senior year.
Absolutely. And this group of students, I think more than ever, has to keep that perspective that they've been through a lot. And if they want to slow down, it's fine. Totally fine.
I mean, Cindy just said that beautifully. Just one thing that I always try to reiterate with my students and with parents, where your child goes to college does not have anything to do with their value or their intelligence. Sometimes we get so stuck on the tier one schools. You can get a great education all across the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And so getting into that tier one school, I get its bragging rights, but I think it's really, really important that we focus on what's best for our child, what's the right fit for them, and really encourage the blinders, like horses in a horse race have blinders so they don't see their competition. They focus on their own race.
Right.
Our students really just have to make choices for themselves, not get caught up in the comparison and competition, which is bound to happen anyways, because social media makes it super challenging not to do that. I'm so glad that was not in my life when
Absolutely.
I was in high school. But it doesn't matter if you're not going to UC. If you go to San Francisco State and that's the right fit for you, you're going to get a great education. And so I just wish we didn't value things, value students, value their futures or their level of success based on where they're going. We're just excited that students are working hard, thinking about their future and creating their own path for themselves. So as parents, I think we have to take some of that pressure off of maybe what we put on kids.
Right.
Is where my kid goes a reflection of me as a parent? No.
No. And if college isn't even in their path, maybe they're going to
exactly
military or trades or
becoming a firefighter, going to fire science school at Solana Community College. I think we have to be really careful with the pressure that we put on our students because they already feel an inordinate amount of pressure.
For sure.
It's okay to slow down. I just want to kind of piggyback off of like the Napa Valley College and the amazing programs they have there. The Transfer Center is so solid. They have such incredible staff there that really work with students that start at the community college and are really making a plan to transfer from there after 2 years. There's different paths for everyone. Everybody has their own unique path and they don't need to compare themselves to anybody around them. We're all going to get to the end goal and yes, whatever that is, we just take different paths and that's okay.
Absolutely. Well, on that note, I think we've got some beautiful paths ahead of our students. Thank you, ladies, for everything you do. Cindy, you are the senior year counselor, so this is woo-hoo, a big, busy year for you. I love that you guys grab a class freshman year and stay with them right through the senior year to keep those relationships going.
Be kind and patient to your senior counselors. They're working their tails off. There's one of them and they want to do the best they can for each student. So I get sometimes we want an immediate email response, but trust me, I see it firsthand. These senior counselors are working overtime to ensure that your student is cared for. Just keep that in mind. Maybe send chocolate their way.
Chocolate, coffee.
Whatever.
Yeah.
If nothing else, kind words.
Thank you.
Kind words and patience.
Yeah.
Well, thank you everyone for joining us. It's been so informative. If I had this information going into it as a first time parent watching my child go through it, it would have been so helpful. I just really want to thank you for everything you did today, but also every day. And thanks again. Really appreciate it.